Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Independent Bankers Association of Texas cancer-free conference call for all Texas banks. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Tuesday, April 1st, 2008. I would now like to turn the conference over to Shannon Phillips, Deputy General Counsel. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning. Welcome to the Closed Account Notification System conference call presented by IBAT in cooperation with the Texas Department of Banking. The Closed Account Notification System is otherwise known as CANS. My name is Shannon Phillips, and I'm Deputy General Counsel with IBAT. And with me, I have Steve Scurlock. He's Executive Vice President of IBAT. And for the Texas Department of Banking, we have Deputy Commissioner Bob Bacon, and Director of Strategic Support, Wendy Boutron, and Everett Jobe, Senior Counsel. Today, our goal is to have you walk away from this teleconference confident that you can get your bank's cans ready in short order. The program is not difficult, it's not mysterious, and the statute rules and forms are succinct and they're straightforward. If you've got concerns coming into this call about how you're going to comply with this, I'm hoping that when you leave, you'll wonder what you were worried about. Our program today will consist of a legislative background by Steve Scurlock, and then I'll follow with a review of the law and rules, and then the representatives of the Department of Banking will close out our part of the presentation with a how-to about the enrollment and use of the system. After that, we'll have an open time for questions and answers. Before we get started, I just want you to know, as he said, that after our brief presentation, you will be given an opportunity to queue up by pressing the numbers he said on your telephone. We would ask that when you do that, just ask one question, and then if you've got another question, queue back up. That'll give everybody an opportunity to ask questions. We're scheduled, I believe, from 8:30 to 9:30, but we're willing to go late if there's still questions out there. And also, I want to remind you that the Texas Department of Banking and IBAT are both available to answer your questions after today. You certainly can call in and ask us. Another thing I want to say is please call me by my first name, it's Shannon. And I think everyone here agrees that if you call us by our last names, we'll think you're talking to our parents. So you can Steve, Wendy, and Bob is fine. And one last thing I just want to say is that if we use the word bank or financial institution, those are interchangeable. There's no distinction. If I say bank, I'm not saying that there's something a bank has to do that other financial institutions don't have to do. So with that intro, I'm going to turn this over to Steve Scurlock.
Thank you, Shannon. I've got a couple of very quick comments just on how this all came to pass. First of all, thank you for joining us. House Bill 2002, which created the Closed Account Notification System with the very appropriate and cute acronym of CANS, was a collaborative effort that has spanned some 4 years. As most of you are aware, Representative Helen Giddings from Dallas, who's the chair of the Business and Industry Committee in the House, was a victim of identity theft. She had an envelope, I guess, of checks stolen off of her front porch, and she experienced firsthand the mess that such can make. To say she's passionate about identity theft would be a dramatic and drastic understatement. We were strongly encouraged by the Business and Industry Committee to develop a system of disseminating information quickly and efficiently to multiple check verification companies in the event of check fraud or ID theft. We were also very much point blank told that if we didn't figure it out, the committee was going to figure it out for us and we probably wouldn't like it. CANS is a result of that charge by the committee, and I very much believe it's a good and very workable program. Again, I'm very pleased with the number of folks that are on this call, and I would strongly encourage your participation in this program. I'm going to reserve the right to comment further as the program goes forward, and certainly we encourage your questions to try to get this thing worked through, and we'll turn it back to Shannon to get going, and we'll look forward to visiting with you as we move forward.
Now, at this point, I want to talk a little bit just about the law and the rules, and then after that, I will turn it over to the Department of Banking to talk about the nuts and bolts of the program and what that means to your bank. The entire process, CANS process, begins when your customer suffers a violation of Penal Code 3251. Now, unfortunately, in the last session, 3251 was amended by three different bills, particularly Section B. Fortunately, I don't think that matters to us. If someone obtains, possesses, transfers, or uses your customer's identifying information without consent with the intent to harm or defraud, then Section 3251 has been violated and your customer is entitled to engage CANs. Business and Commerce Code 35.595, which is a new section of the Business and Commerce Code from last session, sets out the CAN system and allows the Finance Commission, which is the Texas Department of Banking oversight body, to adopt rules. The Finance Commission has adopted rules. In fact, a new chapter, 35, of Title VII of the Texas Administrative Code. For national banks that may not be familiar with the Texas Administrative Code, that's the equivalent of the CFR on the state level. Now I'm going to go through kind of section by section through this pretty quickly. There will be several sections that don't apply to financial institutions, and I'll just mention those briefly. 35.1 sets out the definitions. There's only seven definitions, easy to read. I'd recommend that you start there. 35.11 through 17 are addressing check verification entities. I would certainly read them quickly, but it's not something that you need to spend a lot of time with. 35.31 sets out the responsibilities of the Department of Banking. And then 35.51 generally sets out what an offense is under 3251 of the Penal Code. 3552 talks about what a financial institution must do when a customer complains about a violation of 3251. And financial institutions under that section are, and I'll quote, encouraged to provide a sworn statement and written authorization. It also allows the financial institution to make these documents available electronically if the customer agrees. 3553 states that the Texas Department of Banking will make model forms available. Financial institutions may create their own forms, but personally I can't think of why you would want to do that. The Department of Banking has done a good job coming up with those forms. 3554 sets out what must be in the sworn statement, which is one of those forms. At the top of the page, at the top of that form, there's a notice that's required. And that notice is really more actually maybe for the financial institutions than it is for the customer even, because what that does is it gives the customer instructions on what they have to do. They've got to go get a police report, and they've got to bring back a police case number along with this form completed and signed. And that makes it very easy for your banks to get the program going when someone comes in with a complaining of a violation. And then 3555 sets out the requirements of the written authorization, which is actually the authorization your client, or excuse me, your customer would give to you to authorize you to send this information through the CAN system. And like I said, the sworn statement was combined with the written authorization, and the notice that's in 3554 was required, all to make it simple for the financial institutions and self-explanatory to the customer. Now, the law anticipates two forms and a police report, and I think the Texas Department of Banking did a great job in anticipating what actually happens in the real world when they drafted the notice provision at the top to instruct your customer and combine the forms. I think that really does goes a long way toward helping this system work without having to sit down with each customer when they come in and taking a long time explaining it to them. Moving on to Section 3556, that, again, is a section addressing the check verification entities. You may read that on your own. 3557 states, once a customer closes one or more accounts and completes the forms, the financial institution then has two business days to send the information through CANs. 3558, that section allows a case number instead of a police report to be provided by the customer. And this was done mainly because some of the larger cities can take up to 2 weeks to provide police reports, and the Department of Banking had called around to some of these police departments and decided that if the legislator was okay with drafting a rule like that, and they did consult with her, and she thought that was a great idea. The Finance Commission did also and adopted a rule allowing the customer to just put in a case number or incident number rather than bringing in a police report. And there's no requirement for the finance that a police report's been filed or to verify the case number. Once they bring it to you, that's all you need. 3559, that's the check verification entity's responsibilities responsibility to prevent recommending acceptance of checks on the closed account once it's been reported through the system. 3571 is on incorrect information, and the Department of Banking or the Finance Commission adopted this rule. Basically, what it states is that if incorrect information is sent through CANS, that it is to be corrected in compliance with FCRA. And you'll also notice in my discussion, I've gone through all the rules now, and you'll notice in my discussion of these rules, which is, like I say, very brief, that there's no penalties, as Steve said, for noncompliance. Now that I've worked you through the law and the rules, I'm going to turn it over to the Department of Banking to give you the nuts and bolts of how you would enroll and use the system.
Thank you, Shannon. This is Bob Bacon. Briefly, I want to thank all the financial institutions for participating this morning, and we also want to thank IBAB for setting this up. I think this is a tremendous opportunity for y'all, and we do encourage that you ask as many questions as you have. We established, once we had the charge of the day from the House bill, we set about trying to hopefully make these simple and keep it as, keep the system as simple as possible. One thing I want to clarify is sometimes in the past in talking to some of the institutions, the financial institutions actually is just enrolling or signing up. There is no registration. The registration is strictly for the check verification entities. And we've tried to design it so that once the institution enrolls or has the right to use CANS, then you have a system that you can manage up to 9 sub-accounts. We were concerned about misuse of the system, so we wanted to verify each institution that signed up. So we do allow ourselves up to 2 business days to have a callback system where we will call back the institution, verify the person setting up the account, just so we know there's an authorized user. If you have questions later about the sign up part, we can go into that. As far as the overview, a couple of questions that have come up. I mean, you go through the screens, it's pretty self-explanatory. There's some mandatory information when you're entering on your customer. One of the things, routing number, we default to the institution's routing number, but we do allow for you to enter. We understand some institutions have more than one routing number, purchase acquisition, and so forth. And so we allow to enter a different routing number there. And one thing that we will be coming out on in the next, hopefully next week, is to add a slot for a company name. Right now it's to enter into the first name. I'm looking at Wendy, make sure I'm right. Enter into the first name and then nothing in the last name. That's a pretty high overview. We do each day between 11 and midnight is when we send the information out to the check verification companies. The system closes at that point. The department, we do not maintain a log of this confidential information. We truncate the information. We assign a unique reference number to each transaction just to facilitate some type of audit trail of whether something was filed or not filed. But we do not maintain all the information in total. We truncate it, try to get down so that we have as little bit of sensitive information on our system at any one time as possible. Shannon, I think that's hopefully a quick overview.
Okay. Now, at this point, Xavier, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead and open it up for questions now, unless anybody else here had a comment they wanted to make.
Certainly, ladies and gentlemen. If you'd like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you'd like to withdraw it, please press the 1 followed by the 3. One moment, please, for our first question. And our first question is from the line of Sandy Sullivan with Frost Bank. Please go ahead with your question.
Hello? Sandy, are you there?
I'm sorry. I had you on mute. I apologize. I was wondering how the public is going to be notified about this. Do you foresee banks going out and publicizing this to their customers?
Sandy, that's a good question. Right now, the way the law's written, we're encouraging. There's no mandatory disclosure. We had meetings prior to writing the rules and prior to establishing the system. Question came up there. We really encourage, it's at this point voluntary. We're trying to publicize as much as we can. We know several institutions have done a good job of putting it on their websites. We have it on our website, to get the word out that this service is available to depositors.
And also the, Representative Giddings did have a press conference, I think it was last week or the week before, and IBAT has written a press release that's on our website. And bottom line is when a customer has something like this happening, you know, one of the first places they're probably going to go is to their financial institution. Now, if there hasn't been a loss, that may not happen. And those folks, if they want to participate because information has been is possessed by someone for to defraud or for a nefarious purpose, whatever you want to say, they may not come to their financial institution. So in that regard, it is important to get that word out to the public. And I'm not sure exactly how they're going to necessarily find out about that. But when someone does walk into a bank or a financial institution, we do encourage the bankers to tell their customers about the system. Now, I will say that there is at least one credit union who's used this as a marketing tool. We've seen that. I mean, it was almost, reading that marketing information, it was almost as if they invented the CAN system. And so the bank, I think that there is an opportunity for the banks out there to market this as one of the services that they provide.
This is Steve. We're also looking at providing you guys some statement stuffer templates. We find that when we try to do statement stuffers, we end up with several hundred thousand in our storeroom. So we're working on a template for you guys to use for that. And again, I would just reiterate what Shannon just said, that as we turn off our cell phones here, that this really is, we believe, a marketing tool. Identity theft is a huge issue. The banking department folks can go over the responses that they've already had on this system, which I think is fairly impressive. But I think that the bank needs to use this as a marketing tool, alert your customers to it. Obviously, as Shannon indicated, the vast majority of folks are not going to know that this exists until such time as they are actually have had checks stolen or compromised in some form. So,
Steve, the template you're talking about, will that be available online?
We're hoping, yes.
Okay.
That's the plan.
Okay, we're ready for the next. Oh, Wendy had some.
Oh, and one thing that I did want to say is at this time we have about 769 institutions that have signed up to use our CANS program. And to date we have 139 transactions that have actually been reported through the system.
And that's since March 1st, Wendy.
Yes, that is correct, since March 1st.
Okay, next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Kevin Loudermilk with the Next Bank. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi. We just wanted to know, you referenced the forms that we have the clients fill out. Where can we get those?
You can get those on the Department of Banking website. Go to www.banking.state.tx.us, and there's two different places you can click on. One of them is Banks and Holding Companies. And then down at the bottom of there's a list there of all the regulated industries. Top one is banking holding companies, and the last one is check verification entities. And you can click on either one of those, and the forms are available. Probably the best place for you to go, though, would be banking holding companies, and the forms are there. Now, and IBAT will have those on our website also. Additionally, if you want to put at the top of that form your bank name, you're welcome to do that. The forms are model forms. They can be modified somewhat. I would encourage you to not modify them too much, but there is a blank in there on at least one of the forms where you need to put your bank name in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you were referencing the rules earlier. Where we can get a copy of the rules
you can find those in the same place. And we'll have them on the IBAT website also. We'll have a link on there too.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. One moment, please, for our next question.
1-4.
And our next question comes from the line of Beverly Dobish with the Scotiabank. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi, it's Dennis Simmons with Swatcha, and I was curious that from our members' perspective, if we put a link on our website, should it be pointing to the Texas Department of Banking website? From that perspective, is that the best point? Is that where we should point our website?
Yeah, you can point it there, and you're also free to point it to the IBAT information on the system also. And to let you know, the rules actually encourage regulators I don't think I have to turn it over to Bob to ask him, but I know the rules encourage other regulators to put the forms on their website, and I don't think that the Department of Banking would have a problem with Swatcha putting the forms actually on their website.
Right, that'd be correct. Okay, good, great, that's good to know. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from line of Randy Bono with the Premier Bank. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes, we're a Missouri chartered bank with a branch in Texas, and it's our understanding that we must register. Is that correct?
Well, here again, that's back to banks, financial institutions. We encourage you all to enroll or sign up. The law says if you're requested by your customer to use the system to notify the check verification entity. Since we take up to 2 days to verify, we try to do it quicker, but in a worst case, you might run close to or exceed the timeline on reporting. So it's an innocuous. It takes very little time to go ahead and enroll and sign up your institution today, so that if you do use in the future, you can go direct to the reporting portion of it.
And this is Shannon Phillips. The definition under 35.595 of the Business and Commerce Code, the definition of financial institution means a bank, savings association, savings bank, or credit union maintaining an office, branch, or agency office in this state.
That was our understanding as well. However, what is the definition of a customer? If we have a customer in Texas and they want to file that form, then we file it. What happens if we have a customer here in the state of Missouri and they want to file the form? No. Is it only for Texas customers, or must we also file for Missouri and Illinois customers?
Actually, the Department of Banking has that question answered on their frequently asked questions, and the answer I see here is that the financial institution is obligated to make notification through CANS available to its customers, and then in bold it says only at its locations in Texas. And then it goes on to say further, the customer must be a victim of an alleged crime subject to the jurisdiction of the state of Texas as described in Section 32.51 Penal Code. Within those constraints, the requesting customer need not reside in Texas.
Does that Thank you very it? Much. Yep.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Pat Dunn with the Preferred Bank. Please go ahead with your question.
Hang on just a minute. I'm going to refer to Joni Gonzalez.
We were wondering, as we gather all this information, how are we as banks going to be able to use it?
How are you going to be able to use that information?
Other banks have had identity theft.
I see what you're saying. What you're wondering is then if this information that another bank gets, is it going to come to you?
Correct.
No, it only goes to the check verification entities. That's in the law. That's the only thing the law allows, I guess, is what I could say, is for the information to go to the check verification entities.
And Joni, my recollection from my many moons ago and when I was a real banker and had a real job, is that most banks, if not all of them, have a relationship with at least one check verification company. For opening account purposes or whatever it might be. I know some banks do some check cashing activities and other things. So the issue that made this bill necessary or made us come up with this solution, if you will, is that there are a number of different check verification entities out there. And if the bank reported a lost or stolen check just to one, then there were others that weren't getting the information, and the bad guys continued to pass bad checks and create havoc. So My understanding of this process is that if you guys are using check systems or telecheck or whomever it is, that they will have this information on a statewide basis at least that would allow you to know that there was something going on with that particular account if indeed a check is passed or deposited or whatever the case might be. So, you know, hopefully there'll be some advantages and benefits to you guys as well directly from that.
And there certainly will be benefits to your merchant customers who have signed up for protection under with the check verification entity, because when that fraudster, for lack of a better word, comes in and tries to pass a check, if the bank where they tried to pass that check did not have a relationship with the check verification entity that they had signed up with, they would not know about this, and that check would probably be approved. With this system, hopefully, there's only a few of the big boys, and I think there's four or five of them signed up right now, or there's four. Wendy's told me there's four signed up. The likelihood is that merchant, if they are signed up with one, is signed up with one of these that is registered. And so to a certain degree, your merchant customer is going to get a benefit from you participating in the system. Okay, we're ready for the next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Candace Rice with the American Bank of Commerce. Please go ahead with your question.
Will this ever go to the credit bureaus?
Don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
I don't know why it would.
Okay.
I mean, it's not a normal, and again, I certainly don't pretend to be an expert in what you guys report and what you don't, but unless there's a fraud alert put on by the customer, I don't think that it probably will. This is focused on the check verification entities themselves to try to minimize the passing of bad checks, if you will, and the perpetration of fraud and to stop the downhill slide after somebody's checks are stolen.
And hopefully this will prevent your customer from being reported to a credit bureau. When someone passes one of their checks, they'll get stopped and their name will not be out there and sent to a credit bureau by a merchant.
Candace,
go
ahead, I'm sorry.
More of a preventative measure.
Absolutely, and if we need to look at something like that, please let us know. I mean, if that's going to be advantageous to either you guys or the customer, please let us know, and we can add those guys in. I just, you know, I hesitate to get an involuntary flag on somebody's credit report unless they opt to do that. So
okay.
That's something we can sure address if you guys feel like it's something we need to.
And I think I can speak on behalf of IBAT and the Department of Banking that if something like that does happen and one of your customers somehow does end up with a flag on their credit report due to the CAN system, we certainly want to know about that. I don't anticipate that happening, but if indeed it did happen, please call us and let us know.
Okay.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Donna Kruger with the First State Bank. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes. Hi. Good morning. I had a question like, for instance, say if someone came into our bank and was a victim of identity theft and we used the CAN system and we got that account number and that name out there and that customer starts a new account and goes down to Walmart, is it going to stop that customer from being able to do a transaction?
Donna, it shouldn't, because this is only tied to that particular account.
Good. That was our question.
I think that I've got the Department of Banking here nodding their head in agreement. So.
Because we certainly don't want that problem.
And I will tell you right now, having been involved in this from the beginning, that is certainly something that we discussed at length with the check verification entities.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Marilyn Ann Kowiak with the Benham National Bank. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi. Yes. Does this apply to debit card transactions that are fraudulent?
Who's ready for that one?
Well,
Wendy Boutron.
This is Wendy. The key is that it's called the closed account notification system. So that means the account that debit card is tied to would have to be closed in order to be used as far as reporting it. If you do not close the bank account and you only replace that debit card, then you wouldn't be using the system.
But if we do close the account, then we could use this.
That is correct. As long as you have the three criteria that you need, the sworn statement, a police report, or an account, case number.
Case.
Thank you. And your authorization form.
Okay. Thank you.
So I guess the answer is it does cover debit card fraud. It's tied to the account.
Well, nothing has to be tied to the account whatsoever. If you've got information that's been compromised, someone possesses it, and you think they're going to use it for fraud, you might want to go try to close. Somebody might want to go in and close everything. They may be closing credit cards. They may be closing bank accounts. They may just be trying to shut everything down because they're afraid this person's going to do something. A fraud hasn't even occurred yet. But if they go down and file a police report and report a violation or a crime under 3251 of the penal code, that can kick in the CAN system. Does that make sense?
The account number, not the debit card number.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The account number.
Yeah, it will be the account number that's reported through the system as a closed account. Okay, next question.
Our next question comes from the line of Nancy Vincent with the Orange Savings Bank. Please go ahead with your question.
This is Jeff Ray. I think you answered my question with a debit card, but we're talking a kid steals the mother's checkbook, forges a check, it's a forgery. That's still identity theft, and we're reporting that account if we close that account.
If the customer requests it and if they fulfill, those three criteria. So the police report and the account's closed.
And if the kid steals the checkbook and she thinks he's going to do it, he hasn't even done it yet, you can still engage the CAN system.
The key is closing the account due to the fact that they're compromised information.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And actually, the police report requirement, Everett Job just reminded me of this, but there are frequently domestic issues where there are problems with a family member or an estranged spouse or whomever. And, we want this to be serious stuff. We don't want somebody to be mad at somebody else and go in and shut their account down and create havoc that way. So we wanted them to be legitimate identity theft or fraud issues, and somebody's going to have to decide if it's a family member, if they want to file a police report or not, which creates interesting issues at Thanksgiving, obviously.
And I will say we discussed this at length, that, you know, that exact scenario where someone goes and shuts down someone else's account because they're just mad at them and want to mess with them. And actually, if you really wanted to mess with somebody, you would shut down their account and not report it through the CAN system if you wanted to create more havoc. Once you reported it through the CAN system, those checks are probably not going to be accepted in merchants. And if you didn't report it through, that person would have more problems because merchants would accept those checks on that closed account, and they probably would then at that point be reported to credit bureaus. So there's not a lot of room for mischief in the program.
Any other questions?
Next question.
Our next question comes from the line of Pat Balky with the First National Bank. Please go ahead with your question.
Okay, we've been, I know we have three criteria we have to follow, but what we're having a problem out in some of those rural areas, the customers don't want to go file a police report. They just want us to close the account. So I can't use this system unless we have that police report, correct?
Correct.
Either the police report or the case number, and we found that some police departments, especially in the urban areas, may take a number of days to get an actual police report put together. So if there is indeed a case number, that will suffice to get this thing moving. Obviously, time is of the essence. But the bottom line is if they don't have a police report or a case number, then this is not going to happen. You can still report it to your own check verification company, but you cannot participate in the CAN system.
And from what Steve said, that reminds me that you can usually get a case number, or they call it an incident report number, immediately upon filing it. You don't have to wait for the police report to be prepared.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Richard Carr with the Amity Bank. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes, my question is, what do you do in the event that a client's name may appear in the top left-hand corner of the check as being the owner of the account. However, the account number at the bottom of the check in reality belongs to a different client. That's very common on counterfeit checks.
Well, again, if a person comes in and they've got some kind of problem with their account, and it rises to the level of a violation of Penal Code 3251, and they want to close their account and report it to the police, you can send it through the CAN system.
But as far as I understand from the check verification entities, the name is like a suspenders. You've got the belt, which is the routing number and the account number, and that's what they're going to first look at. And if those make the hit, then they're going to question, and I can't tell you exactly how that would be coded to the merchant, but it would definitely be a warning or a caution at that point. So, and we understand that that does happen quite a bit on forged checks.
But Richard, it is tied to the account number primarily, as Bob
right.
said. Is that answer your question?
Yeah,
or there?
No, because here's what happens, and I find this historically, and I've had to go testify in court on behalf of the client whose name appears in the top left-hand corner, but they're not in any way associated with the account.
Well, we will verify. We'll get back to the check verification companies, all of them that are registered, and just confirm what I'm telling you now is that they're going to primary trigger off of that account number and routing number, okay? And that should stop it from being paid at the merchant level. And,
okay.
And if that's contrary to what I have been told, then we will get back with y'all or somehow.
I've got your name, Richard, and you're with Amogee Bank?
Correct.
Richard, you're talking about an account number, and the account doesn't even exist typically, or?
No.
Or
no.
It might exist, but you've got a different name. And.
No, I've taken your name and your address and put it in the top left-hand corner of the check, but I've taken Wendy's information, her
right.
account number, routing number, and put it in the bottom of the check.
Right,
right,
right.
Well, if Wendy comes in and closes her account, then, yeah, you would send through that account number. And she'd also obviously have to file a police report. Now, if the person who is in the upper left-hand corner finds out about this too, and they want to go down and close their account at their financial institution, wherever that is,
but they shouldn't have to though, because their account hasn't been violated.
No, they shouldn't have to. You're right, and I'm not so sure that they couldn't. But you're right, their account hasn't been violated. But their name's been used, and that is information on them that's being used for a fraudulent purpose. I mean, they theoretically could, but probably wouldn't even know about this.
They're going to know because we're going to tell them.
Okay.
Yeah. Like I said, I think it'll stop it with the routing number and the account number. We'll check with all the companies that have registered with us. We'll get back to you. And this also kind of made me start thinking we may need to set up something on our website of a kind of little ongoing Q&A for issues like this that come up that we can list for, you know, the answer current questions as they come up.
Richard, the other thing that kind of brings up is Everett, Job, and I were kind of having a sidebar conversation over here, is that it may be, as we get into this process, that may be something that we want to add to the system to allow banks to use this to report counterfeit activity or whatever it might be that may indeed help that process along.
The biggest challenge is the person whose name is used in the top left-hand corner and has nothing to do with the check is the person who's going to get bugged by collection agencies.
Right, right.
Okay.
And
if you report them, the only way you could do that was to say, okay, John Doe and his or her TDL are being used fraudulently. Well, when the true John Doe goes out to use their driver's license to write a check, it's going to get flagged. So the only way to beat that, so to speak, is to have them go to the Texas Department of Public Safety and ask them to reissue for them a new DL number, which takes almost an act of Congress to get done.
Sure. Sure. Well, and again, that is the pure identity theft problem, which gets back to where Helen Giddings was. she has copies of several fraudulent driver's licenses that were created with her name and address and somebody else's picture. And has
it's her DL number.
It is her DL number with somebody else's picture. Again, we get back to the pure identity theft issue. And again, that, as somebody had mentioned earlier, that's where credit bureau comes into play as well. But if you guys who deal with this on a daily basis, see that there's something that this process or another process could do to help out and to allow the banks to be a conduit for this information, through this system or something similar without, again, we're very sensitive to additional reg burden on you guys, I promise. But if there's something we can do that makes sense, let us know. And we would love nothing more than to go proactively with something that's come from the industry to address this. And, again, Mr. Williston at the end just pointed out, too, we do have an online system, the Loss Avoidance Alert System, which there's information available on the IBAT website to get this information out to all the banks. So please, feel free. We can send more information out or contact us if you need more information or check on our website. But that goes to all the banks who are participating in that system to basically alert folks for this particular type of fraud.
This is Everett Joe, but we've discussed this and the ideas have sort of formed here, but the bottom line is the system is essentially a draft design. It's the first design. If it works, it may be altered or tweaked in future legislative sessions, but at the moment, counterfeit activities can't be reported through the system, and the system is not designed to protect the name that's on the check. It protects the account. Now, maybe in the future we can come up with some way to report name and driver's and defunct driver's license numbers that are being used fraudulently, but at the moment we can only deal with the account. That's what the statute's aimed at.
So let us know. If you have some brilliant thoughts or some issues that need to be addressed, please let us know. That's what you guys pay us for.
Thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
Our next question comes from the line of Leticia Tellis with the First National Bank. Please go ahead with your question.
My question is, if we have a customer who chooses not to provide the police report or incident report, is there a section where we're going to opt out the CANS, that we're not going to file this through CANS?
No, you just wouldn't use CANS.
Okay, and there's not a form that's required for us to keep on file?
No. Okay. No, if they will not go down and file a police report and bring back a case number or incident number or the police report itself, then they're not entitled to have the bank send the information through the CANS system.
And even if it becomes a closed account, even if we choose to close it, we don't have to have a form to opt out and not file with CANS?
There's no reason not to. If you guys are comfortable doing that, and that's something that we can address up here, but there is effectively a hold harmless agreement on the bank for not doing this or doing this or whatever. I mean, we got that written into the law, but just for your documentation purposes, the fact that you notified your customer of this program and they opted not to do it, it wouldn't hurt. I can't see anything that it would hurt.
Yeah, and it's really kind of a bank policy decision there, because you may have a situation where, even they didn't opt not to send it through. They asked to send it through. They just wouldn't go down and file a police report. And that's really going to be a bank-to-bank decision as to whether or not you want to document that and keep that in the file so that later someone doesn't come back and accuse the bank of not doing what they said they would do. But again, like Steve said, there's no liability under the law.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Terry Brugge with the North Texas Bank. Please go ahead with your question.
One of the questions was that we have is, how long does that information stay out on that system?
I'll let Bob answer that question.
Check verification companies take and keep it in their system, and I want to say 4 years, but I'd have to double check on the time.
The question relates to the CANS system, I
Is the question on how long does check verification use it, or how long is it on cans?
Cans.
Cans, it's a pass-through. I'm sorry. We pass the information through on a daily basis to the check verification entities. We then truncate. We assign a unique reference number to it so we can track that a transaction was filed, but we do not keep sensitive information for a very long period of time at all.
No account number, no name.
Right. We just truncate to, you know, certain digits, and I won't even disclose what those are. Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir. And then we have one other one, I think.
Okay, go ahead.
When we report that, you said you take up to 2 days to call back and verify that we actually reported it.
No. When you first sign up for the system, we will take up to 2 days to verify that you are who you say you are, so that we're sure that it's a legitimate financial institution. Once you're enrolled or signed up to use the program, there is no callback feature. You use the system, you submit the information, it's submitted, and daily then we remit to the check verification entities.
Thank you.
Which I guess also would indicate that you need to go ahead and sign up for this thing before you have an event that would necessitate the usage of the system. Just again, time is of the essence in these situations, and the bad guys tend to strike pretty quickly.
Right, and you've got 2 days to report it through CANS, and it's going to take at least 2 days to register and have the banking department verify who you are, so you might miss your deadline. Again, like I said, there's no penalties for missing the deadline, but it is the requirement of the law to get it done within 2 business days.
Any more questions?
Yes, our next question comes from line of Linda Farley with the United Texas Bank. Please go ahead with your question.
If we have no police report, how do you know that the case number someone gives you is a legitimate number?
The bank doesn't have to. I don't think the bank has to concern themselves with that. There's no requirement to verify the case number. If they come into you and they've got a case number, you don't have to call the police department to make sure they filed a police report. You don't have to call them to make sure that that's the correct number.
They sign a sworn affidavit.
But as Everett's pointing out, they're signing they're swearing to this. When they sign this, it's a sworn statement. So actually, I would think that if anybody's on the hook for this or has some liability, there is no real liability, but by signing that police report, by signing that sworn statement, they're the ones that are putting their name on the line. The bank's just depending on their sworn statement.
Okay, thank you.
And I think the Department of Banking would confirm that if they rely on a sworn statement of a customer, that no one's going to criticize them if it's not correct.
That's correct.
Okay, next question.
Our next question comes from the line of Ashley Farley with the Alliance Bank. Please go ahead with your question.
Yeah, this is Ashley. My question kind of goes back to the family member case and talking about police case numbers and incident reports and all. There are many jurisdictions that will take, as you said, an incident report number. I take this case, and then it gets back to the detectives, and they say, no, this is a civil matter. Sorry, we're closing this case out. We're not handling it. Do we have to wait until we know that this is a case the police are going to investigate before we do this? You know, what if they close it out? Then one of those three requirements haven't been met yet.
Doesn't matter. Nope.
Okay.
Just a police report or incident number is all you need.
All right.
And my understanding, my experience sort of from the outside looking in, is that if a police department will not take a report, typically if you sit there long enough, insist long enough, you will get a police report taken. Sometimes you'll run into somebody that doesn't want to take a report. The police are great. Occasionally you'll run into somebody that doesn't want to take a report. And you could encourage your customer to go back down there, maybe talk to a supervisor if they can't get a report taken. And typically they will get an incident number out of that.
Yeah, and it's not so much the initial report as it is when it gets to the assigned to the detective and they find out that this is a civil matter between mom and son or spouses or whatever, because we have one dealing with that right now.
Are they not even issuing an incident number?
They issue the incident number initially, but then the the investigator called me back and says, we're not taking this case. We've talked to the DA. The DA won't be willing to prosecute this case. They say it's a civil matter. They have to sue.
I'm guessing that probably 99% of these things, or I shouldn't say 99%, but a high percentage of them, there may not ever be an investigation. All you need is that number. Once you've got it, send the information on through. Well, excuse me, once you have that information and the completed statements,
sure,
send it on through.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Chris Newell with the Amarillo National Bank. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes, we have a question about how long the check verification companies keep that information on that closed account.
It's a matter of federal law. I believe from what I've heard, it's 4 years.
Okay. So in the event a bank wants to reuse an account, they need to wait those 4 years, correct?
We suggest that banks not reuse account numbers.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Marty Weiss with the Business Bank of Texas. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi, y'all. This is Marty. We had a question. Where does the sworn affidavit come from?
It comes from your customer. Is that what you're asking? Who signs the sworn affidavit?
Yes. They need to bring that in with them?
Oh, no. You can – actually, it's on the Department of Banking's website. You can either have – and it'll be on the IBET website also. You can either have those available in paper. The rules also allow you, if the customer is agreeable to it, to provide a URL, in other words, telling them where it is on a web page, either on the department's website or on – you can put it on the bank's website. If they're agreeable to take it electronically, you can tell them where it is and have them go get it themselves. So it's going to be provided either by the bank, like I say, or they're going to get it at the department level or more than likely. Right.
Thank you. Our next question is a follow-up question from the line of Beverly Dovish. Please go ahead with your question.
Shannon, hi. It's Dennis Simmons again. Couple of operational questions. If it's an affidavit, does it not have to then be notarized?
Yes. And as far as it's provided, it has a place for notarization.
Okay. So I mean, we run into that in the ACH network all the time about whether it has to be notarized or not. So I wanted to clarify that. Second question. I know that the check verification systems that are operating as check verification systems are probably required to participate in this. But what about, does the law reach out to extend to those organizations that may have internal check verification systems? Number one, are they required? And number two, can they then, if they have, like Walmart, I know, does a two-stage deal. They do their own, then they go outside. And if they find somebody internally, then they'll go out, they never go outside of their own four walls. So, if Walmart wanted to participate in this, for instance, number one, are they required to? And number two, if they're not required to, can they optionally participate?
Dennis, this is Steve. The bottom line is that this was a case of laws and sausage. The large retailers basically lobbied themselves out of this. Which again, I'm hopeful that small businesses that use check verification companies can use this to their advantage. We will be looking at that. I know that the committee will be looking at that. There's an interim hearing scheduled later this month to talk about where we are on this particular program. But the bottom line is that the large self-contained check verification entities or proprietary entities within the large retailers basically lobbied themselves out. So they're not included in the definition of what a check verification entity is.
Okay.
So there you go.
But they could voluntarily participate if they decide to do so.
I don't know that they can. I mean, because they don't fit within the definition of what a check verification entity is. So that's something I hope, you know, if this program works, which we believe that it will, again, evidenced by the results thus far in roughly 1 month, you know, I think that's something that we'll be taking a look at, or the committee will definitely be taking a look at as we move forward.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Steve.
You bet.
Okay, next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Heather Cody. Please go ahead with your question.
So if we have a customer who's out of state and they're filing a police report, say, in the state of California, would that still qualify under violation of the Texas Penal Code for lost or misused checks?
No, I don't believe it would.
It doesn't say a Texas...
Okay, you're talking about those that are a Texas resident with a Texas account, but they were in California and lost their checkbook.
Now, our bank's in Paris, and we have a lot of out-of-state customers. And so if we were going to be activating this system, would they be able to file a police report from their current state of residence and send it to us either through the mail or get
well,
a reference?
Yeah, it's technically not a violation of 3251.
Right.
It would be a violation of the penal code in whatever state that happened in.
Okay.
Thank you.
And we'll look at that. Yeah, I think that's something, again, as Everett pointed out, this is our first pass at this thing. I think that's something in the broad, grand new world of financial services across state lines and all the rest that we really need to probably look at. And we will.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Melody Whitney with the Security State Bank and Trust. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes. Hi, how are you?
Great.
Our question here is, if you report it on the system and then the customer comes in and realizes it was their daughter and wants to rescind that or delete that, can the bank do that?
Yes. There's a place on here to rescind the prior transmission.
I see that, and I actually have that pulled up, and I wasn't sure if that was just to change it, if we have wrong information in there, or if that rescinds the whole thing.
But it really wouldn't have much effect because the account's already closed, and what you're reporting is the closed account number, and the merchants, if they ever do get a check on that, what they're getting from their check verification entity is whether or not they recommendation as to whether or not they should or should not accept that check on that account. So I'm not sure there'd really be a reason to rescind it. I mean, they may want to, but if the account's closed, you know, and you find out there was an error, why not leave it there? Because then if indeed somehow that information got into somebody's hands and they wanted to write a check on that account, this should stop that from happening.
That's great.
Some earlier answers may have made, we tried to make clear, prosecuting the offense is completely different. We're talking here about just the notification. And all they have to do is make the police report, and that triggers, and file a sworn statement with you, that triggers reporting through CANS. It has nothing to do with whether that crime is ever prosecuted or how the issue is ultimately resolved between the parties.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is a follow-up question from the line of Sandy Sullivan. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes, my question is, would y'all mind sharing with us the names of the four verification companies that you said have already registered?
Sure. They're on our website, Network Collection Services, Telecheck, Certegy, and Data Payment Protection Service.
And not check systems?
Not yet.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question is a follow-up question from the line of Nancy Vincent. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes. My question is, what information is passed through to the check verification company? Our concern is that if they're passing more than the account number, that the check verification company may use the name or other identification number, like driver's license number, to stop a transaction on the new account that is opened after the account is closed.
Well, I will tell you, and I'll let Bob answer the question about how much information they get, but they do get more than just the account number. And what they do, these check verification entities, they sell a warranty to their merchants. And if they do recommend acceptance of a check and it turns out that check's bad, if they've paid for that warranty, they warranty it. Now, what do they do at that point? They basically bought that check, and they have a collection system where they go and they go out and try to collect the amount. So,
well, that's not really the question. The concern is my customer comes in and closes their account. We report that closed account. We open them a new account. They go down to the merchant to cash a check on the new account. The merchant declines them because their name and their driver's license and that fraudulent account number is in the system. And in doing so, the check verification company, and their caution because of this warranty, says, well, this name is in the system, this driver's license is in the system. The account number doesn't match, but we've got two hits. We've got the name and the driver's license, but this is a new account number. We're going to flag it as fraud. The merchant then makes a decision not to honor that check. The customer then comes back to us and says, what did you do to me? Why did, now I can't cash checks.
This is Steve again. Let me just, in the negotiations and discussions with the check verification companies, we were assured that that was not the way the process worked. And again, I don't know the inner workings of it. I've learned much more about check verification companies than I really wanted to, but I certainly don't pretend to be an expert. It is my understanding that it is tied to the account number. And that is their trigger point. And when we went through this with the information that you have to provide, name, address, phone number, date of birth, driver's license, or government identify or government issued ID number, that was at the request of the check verification entities because that's apparently what they need in their database. And we felt like that was a lot of information, too much information in some cases. But we were assured over and over again that that only thing that they key on is that routing number and the account number. So if you guys, if any of you have a customer that has issues with that, please let us know, let the Department of Banking know, and we will get that fixed immediately. And, yes.
Steve, this is Stephen Lee, and that is our biggest concern because 95% of the cases that are going to result in us giving notification through this system are going to be just forged checks where we wind up closing the account, opening a new account for our good customer.
Right.
And that good customer goes down to Walmart to cash a check, and they get shut down there because they're in this system, and that's a bad day for all of us.
I don't disagree at all. And all I can tell you, and Bob had something to say too, but we were concerned about the same thing. If it is a bad account number, or a compromised account number, that's what they key off of. They don't key off the name, they don't key off the address, they don't key off the driver's license number.
Giving them all this information, they're not going to use that information except for the account number.
That's what was represented.
Great. Okay.
Let us know if there are issues with that, and I understand those bad days, believe me.
And I believe that's the information that they get from their merchant when this information is passed up to them through their merchant.
Good enough.
Same information. And do you have any experience, Steve, with these problems happening when it's reported?
No, not yet. This will be the first time that the...
No, what I'm talking about is experience when a check verification entity is getting this same information through a merchant. I didn't know if anybody had any experiences.
Let us know
if
that's a problem, and we're very sensitive to that.
Thank you. We have no further questions.
Let me make a quick point for whatever it's worth, and again, this is Steve. There have been some issues on national banks and the preemption of this and whether national banks have to play. Here's the quick bottom line. We believe that this is required for national banks. There's some question as whether the FCRA, there's an FCRA preemption, possibly. The OCC is working on this at the highest levels. However, the indication that we've gotten from the Dallas office is that they are not requiring national banks, quote unquote, to join the system. They are pleased with the system. They are not discouraging in any way them doing this. And again, we are encouraging all of you guys to sign up on this thing. It's something that we believe is important. As we've said before, there are no penalties. However, the laws are made and they're changed frequently. And just as someone who deals with the legislative process, I can assure you that it's going to look a whole lot better for us and for the consumers of Texas. But if we go through next session and we have a vast majority of our banks in Texas signed up on this, that will be a good thing. And as we've talked about before, The bottom line is that we believe that it addresses a real problem out there because of the multiple check verification entities, and I'm a little bit surprised that Check Systems is not on there. They were front and center in these negotiations, and we will work on those guys and be sure and bring that up. If they're on the line, you guys need to get on. But we'll address that at the interim hearing. Again, this is a real problem. This is a solution we believe is workable. We want your input on this, but we also are highly encouraging you to participate moving forward. So, you know, let us know. If you've got feedback, please let us know. If there's some ways that we can make this law better, please let us know that as well. And, again, especially if there are any glitches or problems with driver's license issues and checks being turned down on new accounts or whatever it might be, please let us know. And we really appreciate you guys being on the line. I don't know if anybody else would like to say anything before we close.
One question that wasn't asked, and I did get this week, is whether or not this applies to business entities. And, yes, it does. The Business Commerce Code definition of person is very broad. So it would apply if a business came in and wanted to report this through the CAN system. Oh, yeah. Yeah, this call has been recorded, and we'll have a WAVE file up on our website where you can listen to this again if you'd like to. Also, we're going to make it available to the Department of Banking to put on their website, and we'll also try to get the frequently asked questions up on our website as quickly as we can. I know the Banking Department is doing the same thing. Xavier, are there any more questions?
We have one final question from the line of Leticia Tellez. Please go ahead with your question.
My question was, of those people who've already filed some, have you had any feedback from them?
Negative
or positive?
I have not, and this is Wendy, I have not had any negative feedback. Just about everyone who I've talked with who has actually filed a report through the system has said that it was very easy to use. They didn't have any problems. Really, it's been positive. I haven't had anything negative reported to me.
So, Wendy, can you tell them what the experience is when they go online to do it? What they'll see and how they do that? Just
well, when you first go in as a first-time user, you'll have to create your account. When you actually get to the department's website, we have a link directly to the CANS notification. The notification system, there's a screen you'll see where you'll log in. You use your username and your password. If you have an ad blocker, you will have to disable that in order to be able to see the initial screen, and that's because it's a secure site. The ad blocker opens up and won't allow you to open up a new window. When you log in, the first thing you're going to see is a screen where you have a couple of options. You'll see your bank's information at the top, and then there'll be four options. There's a button for reporting a compromised account, one for rescinding or viewing existing reported compromised accounts, an area for you to be able to update the bank information that was initially submitted, and then, of course, a button to either exit or log off of the system. When you actually go in to report a compromised account, you will be prompted to enter the information of your customer. There's four different sections. The first one is for you to report the transaction information. The second is for the customer's information, and there's various fields that need to be filled out. The third area is for the verification where the institution will basically say, yes, I've gotten the three items needed, their police report, or case number, the sworn statement, and the authorization form. And then the last section is where you enter the information for the compromised account. Now, in that specific area, for some institutions who have multiple routing numbers, this is where you can actually change the routing number that's associated with a bank account. You can enter the check series, or you can leave it blank to cover the entire account. And then there's a button for you to submit. Now, after submitting it, you are going to be asked to verify a couple of fields. You'll be asked to verify the name, the date of birth, the ID that was entered, and the account and a routing number that you entered. You'll select yes if everything is correct, and at that point, you have the option of printing a receipt for the bank's record and for your customer's record. Once you hit yes, you get the printed receipt out. to you, and then your account has been reported. You'll have a screen that is available to you to be able to review all of the submitted compromised account reports that you've made. And, again, that's for tracking purposes for your institution.
And that's the truncated information?
Right.
Now, one of the things that comes up, Wendy, is just on the enrollment process. Is there anything that you could advise the bank to make it go smoother?
No, just make sure that within the institution you know who registered you. That's one of the things that I have gotten a couple of questions on. There's just different people within the organizations, within the institutions who are calling saying, my bank's already registered. Who did it? Well, you know, you may want to kind of get together with your either cashier or whoever's the head of the operations or bookkeeping, of course. There's been a couple of banks who have tried to register 3 and 4 times because they didn't know they were registered. So kind of just talk within your institution to check to see who registered you. They will then have been the one to have signed you a password, and then they can, of course, give you the information you need.
And the one thing I will say, if you do have questions about enrollment, I would recommend that you call the Texas Department of Banking on those. They'll deal with that. Any other questions, you're welcome to call IBAT or the Texas Department of Banking.
If there's
no further questions, Xavier, Steve had one more thing you wanted to say. Do we have any other questions?
No, we have no further questions.
Great. Then I will shut it down here. In closing, again, we appreciate you guys being on the call. This is all you need is one more thing to keep up with, but we do believe this is something that is a win-win scenario. If you have questions, let us know, and I'd be remiss if I did not acknowledge the tremendous cooperation that we had with Representative Giddings and the committee clerk of BNI, Jessica Sand. They were great to work with. This was a long and arduous process to get through, and finally the Texas Department of Banking, as usual, has done just an amazing job with this. We actually hired Shannon Phillips away from there as he was getting everything kind of finalized, and he had to pass it along. And it's just I'm very pleased with the outcome and the relationship we have with the banking department. And again, appreciate all of you guys and your support of IBAT, and appreciate you guys being here this morning. And have a great rest of the day. Thanks a bunch.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation, and we ask that you please disconnect your line.